So many franchises have failed. People either can't take the stress because they're trying to do it all. And you can come in and you could be an amazing hairdresser and you could be fully booked because people love you and love what you do. But can you build a team? Can you deal with the stress of people's emotions, team? Can you do the books?
Everyone wants to see this do well and wants to see us do well. But now when you're bringing on new people and you're sort of teaching them this and that, like with The Apprentice, it's a big part of it now. Yeah, the team is growing and we've got to grow with it.
I get asked all the time by people who want to open up a store, how do you fund it? How do you get there? Just to get down to it, I mean, what does a shop this pretty cost?
Not cheap. A lot of haircuts.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here in Guildford at Diligence with Tom Hoffman. Thanks,
hi,
Tom.
How you doing?
And his trusty sidekick, Finn Addison. Hello, mate. It's nice. We don't often do two people that work together, so I'm quite intrigued by that. Can we start with just giving us a quick rundown of your history for anyone who doesn't know you guys?
Yeah,
Tom, what brought you into, how did you get, what was your route into barbering?
So for myself, I was lucky enough that my mum at the time would take me to a lovely hairdresser's as a child. And it sort of just spurred my interest into hairdressing, you know, barbering. And what I did was when I was very young, I was managed to get a job when I was 14, actually, and work Saturdays. At the time, you could work Saturdays and 1 week in the evening. So I did a couple of weekdays, a couple of hours in a weekday and a Saturday. And then from there, I left school and went straight into a hairdressing for a very renowned company, Tony and Guy. I'm sure a lot of people know it. Great platform to learn your fundamentals and your basics. And from there, you know, did a number of years working through the ranks at that brand until I got to a point where, you know, it was more about the salon politics. I sort of ended up not really wanting that too much of that anymore, because there's a lot that goes on in I say women's salons without being too, that way. And I just wanted something a little bit different and something a little bit less, where there's not too much bitchiness and things going on like that in the salon. So I decided to, you know, move into just predominantly men's hair. And then I started working for a company, that did very well. They blew up very quickly. But I still had this salon mindset behind me and wanted to move forward with, you know, maybe trying to give that to men. And that led us to then going into trying to do a men's salon ourselves, you know, offering that little bit more for men now as things are changing, products wise, you know, service wise, working back from the customer and giving them, men that little bit more, which led us to opening the brand Diligence.
Amazing how many barbers I speak to that have come through that Tony and Guy format. And sorry, Finn, yourself.
I started now probably 7 or 8 years ago. I didn't really know what I wanted to do after college, and I went away, I did a bit of traveling, and then I come back from that and I decided I wanted to pursue a career in barbering. Looked up on Google what was the best barber school, and I ended up going into London and doing a 12-week course at London School of Barbering. And then I came out of that and I joined Tom and another person we worked with, Martin, at a different shop up the road. They took me on as a junior, and then I've worked with them sort of from then. So I've been with Tom now for 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
So a lot of trainings come from him and from Martin as well. It's been a great ride, and now we've been here at Diligence for the last 2 years.
I mean, I'm amazed it's really not quite 2 years old yet, is it?
No, not quite.
When did we first meet? Was it a Barber Bash or was it a Hair Connect? It was an event, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Barber Connect, I think we met you for the first time, but I think we had just spoken through, you know, PR teams.
Yeah, so it's kind of buzzed around there. And one of the things that I always found quite interesting and what I wanted us to talk about to start with is, I get asked all the time by people who want to open up a store, how do you fund it? How do you get there? What does it cost? And obviously, you know, it's a wide spectrum. You can set it up in your shed for 15 grand or whatever and that kind of stuff.
That's where we all started, I think.
Yeah, but, you know, here you've got this beautiful, beautiful space. I mean, it really is. As you walk up Guildford, and Guildford's, you know, not a ropey shopping area. There's some
location.
Beautiful shops everywhere. You're in these lovely little lanes, but it really steps out.
Yeah.
So can we go through some nuts and bolts of what it, and I kind of love how you've put your kind of the back end of your company together. Yeah. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to get down to it.
Yeah.
I mean, what does a shop this pretty cost?
Not cheap. A lot of haircuts. So basically, I mean, a shop costs like this. I mean, I was very lucky to have free reign. I'll go into a bit more of that in a bit and who and how. But a shop like this, you're touching on about
100K. Yeah. But it reeks of it.
You can do it one way or you can do it another way. Mm. And, you know, you could spend a little bit more money or you could spend that little bit less, but things start to happen, things break and things like that. But what I wanted to do was have at least free reign and find somebody that would invest in me, that would give me that free reign. I had a lot of ideas that would come out, and I knew they wouldn't be cheap, but I knew that what we were going to do was going to be able to make back that money. So, you know, I lived the dream when I was designing this shop. But it was not cheap. No, it wasn't.
To get hold of, or to get someone to let go of £100,000 investing in you, how does that come about? And I think talk about your setup, because you've got more than one business partner in this.
Yeah. So basically, the back end of it is I was the first one in the salon, last one out. And I think, you know, not only do we talk to clients.
This is when you were working somewhere else.
Yeah, when we're working somewhere else. Yeah. So when I was working somewhere else, and I had somebody almost watching me through the window. Okay, so somebody was seeing me doing that. And we became friends over the years anyway. But what happened was he sees the work rate first off. Mm-hmm. So the work rate was there. And then, you know, over the time period, people have offered me money and said, do you want to do this? I would like to do that with you. But it's about finding the right person and the right character, right? Because you don't want somebody knocking on your door every day, how much money's been taken, how much you're doing. So it was about having a silent partner for me that would believe in me. And as I said, they was watching me through the window. And then till one day he just said, why are you not doing this yourself? You know, we were friends by this point. I'd known him for a long time. And then when it got to that, you know, I said, look, I'd love to. Sat down over some time. I said, this is not going to be cheap, my idea. I gave him my pitch. And luckily enough, he was very generous about how it went, and still to this day does not give me any trouble. You know, he's getting, you know, we work back on how much he put in, and I'll talk a bit more about that later if we need to. But yeah, he gave me complete freedom, and that's the first step. Mm-hmm. Shall I go into sort of more about the business side of things and how?
I'm intrigued to kind of, I mean, at some point you sit down and the money gets transferred from his account into the company account, and you get to start spending it.
Yeah, so
how does that play out?
So with as I said, with my investor, it was I had freedom. So it was over a period of time. I knew that I had to find a location. So he helped me do that. He had a shop in the same area as us. So he knew some of the people that were, you know, renting the shops and things like that. So there was a relationship there, stuff that I knew nothing about. So when it came to the money side of things, it was, I need this for starters. And then from there on, there was an account that the money was in, and we could move on and buy as we went. Yeah. We had a short period of time to create the shop, didn't we?
Yeah, So
we had a short period of time where we had to get things and, you know, create the shop. One thing that obviously made it more expensive, which everyone does need to know and figure out, is that, you know, when you have no, you know, you haven't got any relationships with any builders merchants or anything like that, it becomes much more expensive because you're buying things singularly. As we've moved on now and got more chairs and building bigger things and things like that, we've got relationships with builders merchants or a mirror company or things like this where we buy more stuff so we get discount. But because I went quite high end with it all, it cost us a lot. So yeah, freedom of.
And were you having to keep your investor sweet through all this time? Was he quite relaxed about
very,
it?
Very, very. He was very relaxed with us, wasn't he? So very, you know, very relaxed with us, and still is.
But I mean, presumably behind this, there's a good legal framework that you guys,
of course,
got set, and he's a part of the company. Presumably.
Yeah, so he's a director of the company, and anything that I need to go to him for, he can help me out for if it's needed that way. More just from the silent investment side. So my investor that gave, you know, luckily gave me the money to do it, isn't so much on the business side. But then what I did was we went into, you know, conversations, and I always knew that I wanted to have somebody on the business side, which we can touch on as well, which was great. So, you know, I always knew I would need help with running a business and doing the business side of hairdressing, because I'm just a hairdresser. And I'd seen over the years a lot where people had, you know, I've explained to Finn many times where, you know, Tony and Guy will have somebody that will is an amazing hairdresser, fully booked, busy, but then they'll go and do a franchise or something like this, not just Tony and Guy, but other brands. And what happens is they don't know how to do business and they don't know how to run a team and things like this, or execute a business idea.
And so many other companies outside of our industry will have. You have a CEO who runs it.
Course,
you
have
a finance director. That. You have all these different parts to play.
Exactly.
And then we turn up and you and suddenly we can do it. Head of marketing, head of sales,
and you think you can do it.
And you're like, hang on a minute. I failed at school. All I've got is a shop.
We've all become hairdressers because we don't have those GCSEs. All those qualifications, we're not interested.
But very brave to kind of go out and hold your hands, and I think that's something that I didn't do. Definitely, I just blagged it. I'm like, I can do that.
And there's only so far that can go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, but to find someone.
Yeah, so I knew instantly. So I had somebody that sat in my chair, and you know,
this is another client.
Client. So this was a client. So all the time I was building up, like I said to Finn, I've said to him now, when you're looking to do things and such, you've got to be networking with your clients all the time. So every client that sits in your chair has got a backstory, or they do something. So I was always asking people what they do, you know. And look, even when I was looking for investment, I was still doing the same thing when I wanted to do my own thing. So when a client sat in my chair, he was a very successful businessman. He'd done very well. And he'd worked for a lot of big companies and built up a lot of great brands. So I knew that it was the person that I wanted to have a chat with. At the time, I gave him my pitch. I showed him my mood board that I'd had for a very long time. And he wasn't as interested in as much as I wanted to do. So what I said was, listen, let's go for a coffee and I'm happy to give you a percent. We had a coffee and I was happy to give him a percentage of the shareholding. So he became an NED. And from then, obviously, it's still time that they're spent working on your business. Sure. So he has other things to do. So we were then paying a slight fee just to have that to go to at all times. So he had a percentage, and also I could pay him a fee monthly. And, you know, you get to a certain point where you start learning, like Finn. So,
and from your point of view, though, your investor, from your mind, your investor's part of this company. You're not you're not trying to buy him out year on year.
No.
He's part of your growth and part of the company and part of your team.
One thing that we live by, and me and Finn have always lived by in the salon, is collaboration. And you come without something. And when you're moving on, you know, you didn't have it in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm never one to cut people out. I'm always one to see people that, you know, if they've been part of something, to carry on. Obviously, there's different models that people may use, especially with investment. You know, people cut
people out.
Did
you look around at that? Did you have it in your head that you wanted a primary investor that was silent and funding?
Yes.
Did you look at, I don't know, bank loans and other ways of doing it? Or did you not?
No, I always wanted to work with somebody. I always wanted to do it that way.
So you were much more aware of, I don't know, your kind of the holes in your skill base.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could kind of 100%. Go, I want someone who's got a proven track record.
Yeah.
So how does the business partner fit into this? As your
Is
it almost coaching you, or do they actually take over and do a lot of the stuff themselves?
It is almost coaching, because obviously the salon day-to-day life, I know that. I know how to do that. But when it comes to negotiations with product companies, when it comes to executing an idea that, you know, we're all people that have, you know, great minds in the hairdressers. You come up with the ideas all the time. But the reason you don't execute them all the time is because you don't know how. And if it takes a phone call to somebody that's, you know, high up in another company or a magazine or this or that, all those types of things.
But your business person is someone that's on hand. So do you have a relationship with them?
For sure. I mean, we have sort of quarterly appraisals where we all sit down and we all talk about how the business has been doing over the last sort of 3 months. And then
things I know nothing about.
And this is important because it sort of brings you back into it. And, you know, as someone who's, you know, working here and I want to do a bit more, it's, you know, bringing you into that sort of side of things and how we've got to, like, do the targets and what numbers we got.
So everyone as a team is very aware, and that is down to, and that's the things that I can pass over to my business partner who understands it very well.
Everyone's so scared of that. Yeah. Everyone's so scared about opening up, and this is what it is, even with their own team, where actually it creates much more.
Yeah, it creates, because also, you know, you tell, if the team, you know, they don't know every single number and figure that me and Finn go through or my business partner goes through, but it's one of those things that if the team knows, you know, if a month is struggling, they still got to know that what cost to open the door. Mm-hmm. People, it's good for people to know this. And they're like, okay, I'm just coming to work to do this or this. But if you don't help or do the, hit the numbers and hit the targets, we all won't be here.
Yeah. And but does your business partner, what's your business partner's name?
Steve.
So does Steve give you those figures? Or is that something that you two, you kind of collate together? Is he like, right, this is what you need to be
hitting? Yeah, so we've progressed, you know, to keep a shop like this alive. You know, it's an expensive shop. Mm. We've progressed a lot. So over the, you know, from when we first started, I don't mind saying, you know, certain figures and stuff, you know, that you get from one and to progressively take more staff on and to reach targets, you have to move with it. Yeah. So it becomes more of knowing the figures and having to know exactly what needs to be hit, because what's going out, you know, staff costs these days are incredible, because, you know, a lot of people may have come from a chair rent and you're trying to take the best people in. So you've got to pay them a great day rate or you do a percentage or they ain't going to come.
Yeah.
So you become very stopped. So those figures are so important to us, and we look at them every day on the computer, don't we? Yeah. And we know that next month, every month we want more. It has to be more, especially if we're building our staff up. Getting them busier. We need to see that 2 grand more, 3 grand more, 5 grand more each month.
But do you have, so, you know, Steve's obviously got his job, if you like, and is well executed at that. But presumably you guys, or one of you, are the ones that then pushes that through on a day-to-day basis with the team to be conscious of it. Well, that's what I'm saying. I think, well, you know, again, as the owner, when you're juggling everything else and you're thinking about how we're going to get this, but how we're going to get more customers, and you're doing your head of marketing or whatever.
And that's,
through to the team on a day-to-day.
Well, this is one of the struggles, right? I mean, you want to get everybody on the same page and you want to lift it through. Having a business partner that deals with that stuff lets us be able to do that and also come in without as much stress, because when you're at home, for the first part of this, you know, when we had the company, I was doing a little bit of accounts myself and things like that. And it was almost ruining me in here, because I was going to bed late nights. I was thinking about numbers all the time. When you don't see the numbers as such, even though you know they're going on the background, you get told them. So, you know, when your accountant comes in and your business partners start taking on more things when you ask, you actually are freer in your mind to be better in your salon. And I think a lot of people that have taken on shops that are dealing with all these things themselves in the shops, you know, you've seen me stressed, know, and then when I handed out things was able to give, you know, what's the word?
Jobs
out to other people, all these things.
Delegate
well, jobs.
It's
massive.
Thing. As barbers or hairdressers, you're quite good at delegating in the shop.
Yeah.
You know, can you stop this up? Mm. Can you do this?
Yeah.
You know, we're quite good at that day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the business side, everyone I know it's like, I'll deal with that. I'll do it.
Exactly.
And you're dragging this massive sack behind you. Sure. And then you're trying to be kind of light, bantering and cutting hair.
Definitely.
You're psychotic.
That's it.
It's like, you know, your mind's going crazy. But to give that, to portray that to our team and try and do that, we hold monthly or every other month, we do a staff meeting.
Yeah.
We go through everything, you know, what needs to be done, what target needs to be hit. You know, we're always thinking of the next thing that can make that bit of money.
And to talk about figures with your team at a staff meeting, rather than, you know, you're not cleaning out the coffee machine, you never do, you know, rather than those meetings being a kind of petty nag, that to actually sit there and properly share the kind of
you have to think,
done.
You have to think future, right?
Yeah.
So Finn has spent so much time with me, but I've told him a lot. So now when he goes off to have his own salon, you know, another diligence like this, he knows this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to do exactly that, so then he'll have, if he didn't know this stuff from now, he would then have to pay someone to do that. Mm. And then that would cost our company. So if people have some sort of aspect of knowing these things, I want everyone in this room, we have 9 members of staff, I want everyone to have a diligence.
Yeah.
So if they have some understanding of that along the way, then
I think to get that grip of it, because you kind of, I'm going to go back to figures because that's what I want to talk about today. You know, you take a shop like this, you know, you have the kind of, you know what your rent's going to be, presumably, which I'm guessing ain't cheap.
It's not too, it's not astronomical, but it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. So you've got your rent and you know that. You open your door, you're signing your lease, you know what that is.
Yeah, you know it.
And then you get the kind of surprise attack of the business rates.
Rates, here.
And then this kind of tower of
it's endless.
coming at you.
Yeah.
And you're not prepared for it. And presumably, even with a business partner, there's still things that you're like,
so much.
Shit, I didn't expect it to cost that much.
And so much. So much.
Lived through this 16, 17 months ago.
Yeah.
If you were starting now,
yeah,
would there be a difference in the way you do it with the experience that you've had? Or do you feel that you'd put everything in place to launch?
I thought about it long enough. And I think that it was imperative to me to have those people in before, because I didn't know how to do those. I'm at a point now where I understand a lot more. But I still, you know, and so much asking too much from, you know, my business partner, it can fizzle out a little bit less than I was doing in the start.
Prior to all this, sorry to chop you, but
that's all right.
Are you quite good at anyway asking for help?
I think that's a big thing, as a guy,
we do get trained not to ask for help.
You've got pride, right?
Yeah.
But I've watched so many podcasts and so many things, and the richest men and the guys doing so well, they pay somebody that knows how to do it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know someone that's going to do it better than you, okay, not your haircut, hopefully, but if you know someone that's going to do a job better than you, you pay, you know, a lot of them pay the right people take the right people on. And I always live by that in my head. I think, you know, Finn's better than me at putting together a video or putting together, you know, the rotor or something like that. Whereas I can do it, but I know he would do it better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, He does things like, you know, so it's one of those things.
When I said, oh, he's all right, I'm asking help, like, I take it he asked you for help.
He asks a fair bit.
Have you heard that, though? Are you quite good at, because I just met your new apprentice, top boy, who was incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Do you find that becomes a culture that runs through, that
everyone's quite open to help. Everyone wants to see this do well and wants to see us do well. So I think the team especially are really taking on a lot of roles and sort of trying to help out as much as we
can. We like to make everyone feel like they have a certain role. I mean, you've got your younger lads that are coming through that we're whipping them with a fucking whip every 2 seconds, but that comes with maturity. But, you know, I give jobs to Finn that I don't want to deal with anymore. Finn's at a level now where he's starting to delegate to the next person. And there's coachable people in every salon, and there's people that aren't so coachable, but you take advantage of the people that are.
Well, I think that's the interesting thing. We've had a few conversations about the whole thing of having kind of mentors and coaches.
Yeah.
And our industry at the moment's quite awash with coaches and mentors and so on that you can kind of, which is great. But with a lot of the chair rentals, a lot of the guys on there that are working on their own, you don't get that.
No.
And you must now, in the last kind of, I guess, the last 16, 17 months of being here, you've learned stuff that you didn't go into barbering to learn. You didn't expect anything.
No, never really.
That you're starting to feel more like a business creator than a barber.
It's really part of it. And I think I feel it more now with the team growing. Before it was, you know, just a few of us.
Yeah.
And we all sort of just got on.
We knew our roles and we sort of did it.
But now when you're bringing on new people and you're sort of teaching them this and that, like with the apprentice, I'm sort of learning to teach him and pass on my skills to him and other sort of things. I think it's a big part of it now is that, the team is growing and we've got to grow with it.
It depends as well, like what sort of salon you want. If you're happy with people coming through the door and the conversation to be a certain way and this, that, and the other, that's fine. But what we're trying to do is, you know, create a salon and a movement, which is, you know, working back from the customer, giving a client exactly what they want. But then everyone needs to be on the same page. They need to understand that if someone's paying 40 quid and not 20 quid, you know, that you need to be a certain way and hold yourself in a certain way in the salon. So that's why the staff meetings and then being involved in it a bit more, you know, we want to be able to appeal to the richest men in the world and also be affordable for the people that can't as well. So,
and now
with a tiered system,
16, 17. Yeah, I did like that. I'm going to cover that later. I think that now 16 months in, you know, I guess that 100 grand doesn't seem like a lot of money now. I mean, leading into it when you were trying to get 100 grand.
Yeah.
wanting 100 grand and not having it, it seems like an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
But once you've had it, done it, and spent it, presumably that's
it goes
not
very
a stress.
Quick.
Yeah, no,
it
it's
goes
gone and you're off.
But also,
and that 100 grand is now this building that, that's lived in your head.
Exactly.
So.
And the shop has, look, the shop done phenomenally well our first year, crazy. And we had to keep up with that. Which was, you know, that's where the stress has come from, because you're, you know, you're trying to keep up with the fact that you're, you know, people are coming through the door. I mean, at one point this shop was turning away, and this is the honest truth, 10, 15 people every other day, you know, where it was so busy and we couldn't house it. So then we had to expand, which cost more money, you know, to get more mirrors and more things in. So the investment came back in, and we've also got, you know, property upstairs, what we're going to invest into again, which, you know, my investor's very open about. So you go in with the movement as well, you know.
But do you find
difficult.
That your ambition linked now? That is it your business, is your backer and your business partner pushing you, we've got to do more money, we've got to do this? Or are you, is your ambition that you want it to do feeding them? Do you know what I mean?
Well,
that makes
sense? It's a good question, because I got into this not about, honest truth, it's not about myself earning loads of money. It wasn't really about that. But then you have people behind you, or sort of people that have helped you, that are business partners, that all they're worried about is how much is it, and that's what they care about, because, you know, this is my passion. So I'm not on the level of caring that much about it. Obviously I want to earn money, I want to support my family, and we all do, but, you know, when it comes to hairdressers, it's not always about that for us. So the great question, yes, they do push for more, and which is good for us, because we still want to be bigger and we want to do better. When it comes to certain aspects of the company or business, you know, I know what works, as such as employing people quickly or employing chairs to cover chairs. And I've always had a push from my business partners where, you know, we need 6 chairs running 7 days a week. That's what they want all the time. So we built the team very quickly, which, you know, can leave gaps in some people, but you still got to pay them their day rate or however it costs. So I had to be quite stern about the time frame of taking more people on and how quickly they was wanting me to do that, which is something that only hairdressers and barbers know. It takes at least 6 months to build up a full column. But when people were coming to the door, you know, and we couldn't house them or couldn't fit them in, you know, it was, their argument was, we're turning money away, which I understand fully, and we both fully understand. But we know now, and I'm sure you know, you can't just have someone in here earning, say, 150 or 100 quid a day and doing nothing, because just to do that one client. Yeah. So building a team from 3 to 9 like we have had to take time.
You've
and I had to start.
Experience people.
Yeah,
as
you've
well,
got to have experienced people. And
are you finding that the other way? Sorry, I'll keep jumping over.
No,
I've
fine.
Got so many things floating around my head. Are you finding now, so your investors, you know, your money guys, his brands have all been, I think it was fashion
and
that kind of stuff.
And a lot of tech.
And are you finding he's starting to understand barbering more now in his journey? He's like, look, we should get 3 more barbers and then we'll make more money. Yeah. Is he now understanding
100%.
The industry is
not only does
different.
He understand, and he's been understanding and coming in here as well, but, you know, he was coming to the shows and seeing all these things and then hearing, you know, what people are doing, and we're mixing.
Yeah, no, I met him at the
awards.
Yeah,
and we're asking things like those questions to people. So there's definitely a deeper understanding there, but I still have to say, you know, that doesn't work with us. Yeah. That's a tech company you're talking about in his, you know, through in some vertical or wherever he's coming from through it. But, you know, there was definitely a time where I had to make my investors understand the business a bit more.
That's good. I quite like that kind of that change.
But then, there's different views. There's different views. You know, if you've got somebody that's great with business, made a hell of a lot of money with a lot of people. So for the first part of my journey, it helped so much, especially with execution.
I mean this respectfully, but, you know, for one shop, the infrastructure that you've started it with is very unusual.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if you look at, you know, you've mentioned Tony and Guy, but, you know, there are huge amounts of big, and certainly in our industry, big chains.
Yeah, of course.
But they have directors that aren't hairdressers,
exactly,
that are there to run the business.
But then so many have, without being disrespectful to a lot of brands, so many have failed. So many franchises have failed, right? And that is because people either can't take the stress because they're trying to do it all, or they don't know how.
Yeah.
And you can come in and you can be an amazing hairdresser and you could be fully booked because people love you and love what you do. But can you build a team? Can you deal with the stress of people's emotions, team? You know, can you build other people through? Can you do the books? Can you do the accounts? Do you know how to execute ideas, you know, in a business-like fashion?
I think that's the bit. You kind of, you know, with an industry, with a kind of era now where we talk about burnout a lot.
Yeah,
you know, our industry is it's really brutal.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. I know.
Especially if you're not getting, you know, from your point of view, you're I guess fortunate in this fact that you're just naturally working around these business people now, and you're getting there. Yeah, certainly my generation and your generation even more recently, you didn't have that. You know, I worked for big companies, but you never met any of the business side. I worked on the salon floor. I worked in the shop.
Yeah.
I worked with the other hairdressers. Yeah. I worked with a manager. But the echelons of business didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, for myself, when obviously I've been here from the start, from before this even started. So I feel like I am very much a part of Diligence and of the brand. And I do feel part of it. Mm. And I think a lot of the guys, you know, maybe the newer guys, not so much, because maybe they just see it as coming to work for a brand. But I think the people who've been there from the beginning really do feel like part of this.
And I think that's really important.
Well, I think having an ethos, you know, we chat to, Josh with Menspire, who's obviously got Sam that carries a big part of that and allows them that flexibility.
They've pretty much done that.
And I think there's such a small amount of people that are doing it.
Yeah.
But so many guys I speak to are already talking about expanding.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're kind of like, hang on, there's an awful lot to be said for, as you've done, expand within your domain, maximize what you've got, and then make the decision of why you're going to expand.
When we had that, we were the same mindset.
Yeah.
But then when you talk to the right people, my business partner, things like that, you know, even him himself would probably say, we wanted to be visible. It's about visibility and getting more shops and this and this. But who's going to leave the shop? Me and Finn would go to the other shop. And then is this shop busy enough with the new people or the other guys coming through to keep that business up here earning the same money? Yeah. No, it's not. So we rethought ourselves and we said, right, what can we do? What's not making money? Okay, this isn't making money. Let's move that there. Let's move that there. So we made the shop bigger. So then what we thought was, once the shop's bigger and we're at capacity where we've got 9 boys working 7 days, over the 7 days, we rotate, the shop's open all the time, but 6 chairs full. We're still not quite there. We're about 5 chairs at an average of having them full every day. But there's gaps. So once you sweat your business out, then you can say, right, okay, my clients are now being, I'm seeing my clients all over the place because I'm not here as much. I'm working with other companies. I'm doing this. Now I'm getting a culture where Finn's doing my clients. Now Finn's got clients that he's done for years that are going to my other lads. And once you get to that point, you can start to say, right, we need a new shop. Yeah. We need another shop. Mm. And I think we could pretty much get there roundabout now if we wanted to. But that was we wanted to do that, get a new shop straight away.
But so that's many what you want to do that again and again. And it's like,
but that is where it goes like that.
That's where it goes downhill because you can't keep the quality across the shops.
Can't keep the quality.
It's hard. Yeah. And then bringing on new staff who are experienced and...
And you're not going to open up a new shop and put 3 guys in there that you've never worked with before.
No.
So it has to be me and Finn go over there at least 3 days a week or wherever it may be, or your strongest men go over. You build it up, you do that. But we just, you know, that means money's going away from there. And until you see your clients going with other members of staff, until you see that happening, until you see, you know, your younger guys or your newer guys fully booked. I mean, we're seeing it all the time. Mm. We're taking on 500 every quarter. We looked at it was about 500 new clients every quarter. We're doing amazing. We're doing about.
And do you find? I know I'm labeling this, but I'm gonna kick myself if I don't. Is your business partner, your investors, are they making? Are they happy with the money they're making? And are you making money on par with them, or do you look at them going, at the moment they're going to make more than me, and that I'm fine with it?
When I got into, you know, percentages and things like that, you know, I actually was happy to give up. Like I said to before, the way I think about things is different. I came with nothing, so I know that everything comes at a price. So, you know, you're paying for advice, you have to pay these things. It's people's time, you know, it's their own type of thing that can fizzle out over time. It becomes a part of a chapter of what you're doing. Sure. But yeah, everyone's happy, and you know, you get to a point where, you know, I could start asking for more money and things like that, but it becomes a, you know, you start dividend, you get your dividends and things like that at a point, but we try to keep it in there. And you know, they are probably making more than me because I had to give up some of my percentages and things like that.
But I think that's
and
the point.
I didn't have the 100K at the start.
I think that's the thing, you know, whichever way you do it, if you're using 100K of someone else's money or 20K or whatever, there's a penalty in. There's a price to pay for it and a reward that they want. If you go to the bank, you're going to borrow 20 grand, they're going to want 30 back.
Exactly. And, you know, I was happy to give up a percentage of what I was, what I was going to have to be able to make sure that things worked. And I knew that. So
I'm going to rewind a little bit because I'm intrigued about what you brought in your careers forward. So you've now, obviously, Diligence has a mindset, it has an ethos, it has its brand.
Yeah.
Did that come about from people you'd worked for previously, or was it kind of at wanting to do the opposite of what they did? Was it learning from their mistakes, or how did the idea to work come together?
So,
because you'd worked for another company for a good few years.
And you know, I knew there was something out there. And to be honest with you, I felt a deep in myself that I knew that men are going to start worse, wanting more. They were paying more. I was working at Tony and Guy where men were paying me £70 for a haircut. Mm. So I knew that that was there.
But from Tony and Guy, you went from there to quite a big franchise branding.
Yeah, of course, but I still had the idea.
More of a barber.
More of a barber. And I knew that it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I just knew it wasn't enough. So I just created this idea over probably about 10 years of my time and built this, you know, Pinterest, and exactly wrote it down all the time. And I was dreaming about doing this whole men's salon. I know there's a few men's salons, but there's not a men's, you know, like an everyday, you see what I'm saying? Like a lifestyle. And that's what I was trying to create, a men's lifestyle. So I wanted people to become part of something and be part of something. Sure. So that idea came, and we just went for it. We literally went for it. So with the wellness and the collaborations, you know, the workshops we do that all men can come to, it was like a family ethos and a family, you know, of guys who wanted more, getting that little bit more, not just a men's salon. It was more like, what else can we offer? Mm. We can, you know, we do workshops where you can come and, you know, I don't know, learn about a mortgage or things like where we invite people to do a wine tasting or this, or learn about products. And we hold
and
nice
it's all getting people from in the town,
the community,
you know,
so, to come and do those things.
And
you know, and we sell clothes, you know, we collaborate with clothes. And it was just having something that was more like a hub. Mm-hmm. Like a hub for everything. And we're still we still haven't launched loads of things. You know, we have a great chef that was one of our clients. We want to invite our clients to come and do a night on how to cook, or like all types of things. Yeah. We want to hit all these things, but you know, time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Timing.
And you said something really interesting just before we started here today, that you were working for somewhere that was, both of you were working for somewhere 100 yards up the road or whatever.
Yeah.
But you didn't contact your clients. You opened up fresh.
No.
And obviously some of your clients would have found you. But overall, you weren't robbing a database. No. You were like, right, I've got confidence in what we sell. We're going to do
what
we do.
Yeah, we actually had a situation where, because we weren't contracted at all. So, and we'd worked there for a hell of a long time. And we actually
And
built,
you share rentals in that?
No, we were getting a percentage at the time. Right. But we were working, you know, we worked hard and we built that shop to be the most successful one they had across brand, I think, at the time. But we just weren't getting treated very well. Mm. You know, to the point when we told them we were going to do something else, they're like, oh, we'll pay you all a grand and we'll keep you to keep you here. And we'd already made our mind up. We were gone. You know, when we left, there was a few letters come through, or a few people try coming saying, you know, you've told this, you've done that, you're never going to make it down here, we're going to do this and that. But we was like, okay, come look at the booking system. Mm-hmm. We have no names on it. We have nobody. But what we did was, as soon as we opened the shop, we just started an Instagram. We started an Instagram. We went out flyering. We're knocking on the doors. We're talking to people in the street. And we still do that now. Mm. If we have gaps in our days, we go outside and we say, would you like a haircut today, sir? Mm. We're here. And we just built up and built up and built up. And, you know, we've only got 3,800 followers.
That's it.
But we get 212,000 people coming.
It's a lot of local,
you know,
people,
looking at the Instagram.
Yeah,
so but it's all local. Because there's a lot of barbers around here, but nobody's doing it like us. And you won't walk past here without hearing the music. Mm. Everyone's looking at it. So when we left, there was a bit of people, you know, they were saying, you know, we've nicked their clients or things like that, but We went out there like that on the same day. We all walked out on the same day with nothing. And there was no way of us getting any taking anything from it.
We didn't have access to
it. We didn't have access to it. And we also used a whole new system, which is Get Timely, which is a great thing for hairdressers if anyone wants to use that. It's great. It's really personal. It's a great booking system.
You can do the consultations on
consultations
there.
Consultations on there and pictures.
All the details. It's really
and
good.
We started fresh. Mm. And I think what we've got, how many clients now on theirs?
What, on the system? I mean, monthly, probably about 1,200 every month.
We do.
And then,
we
but
do.
I don't know overall, probably about 4,000.
But you opened up, there was just the two of you and another guy. There's three of you to launch.
So yeah, there was three of us to launch, who and we were great friends anyway. I actually had everything ready, Anthony. I had everything ready before I told these guys. So I found the property. I kept it very quiet. I found the property. I had a deck to show them. I showed them my video and everything like that. And it took me a long time to sort all that out and have it in place. And I took a massive punt that they may not come with me.
Okay.
So when I actually left, when we were about to leave, I took you guys in for a coffee and they like looked at me, yeah, but you need a property. I was like, done it, sorted. You need this, you know? And everyone went home and they didn't have a, you know, they were probably thinking, weren't you? I don't know.
Yeah.
So they're probably thinking like, how's he managed that? But I knew what I wanted to do and I knew that I was going to give these boys, not give them, I was going to help them. We're all going to have a better life just doing this for ourselves and doing it. And we never looked back. And we went with three of us. Then we took on Liam, who's great, great with the clients. He has his own little way. And that's what we like. Everyone's got their own little way. And from there, Luke, who's amazing, you know, he's only a year into barbering when he met us.
Mm.
The guy is incredible.
He's excelled.
He's excelled incredibly. You know, everyone's hovering around who's good. If they're not busy, they're watching, they're doing this. And we've just gone 1-2 every 3 months. We've took on someone more. The last couple of months, we took on two guys very quickly because of, you know, the want and need to come through the door and us be able to house them. But, you know, maybe quicker than I wanted, but I wanted to make sure that my argument was done in here. You know, all my chairs are full, my business partners are happy and that side of things. But, you know, it's been great, honestly. Like and what we've stuck by has worked.
Yeah.
I think it's really, I mean, testament to yourself, the team we've built, and you know how it has gone. Is just I mean,
is that something that's really very quickly overlooked, isn't it? The idea that there's some brilliantly talented people out there, but they're not going to be able to motivate people around them.
No.
Being able to share clients, want someone else to be as busy as you.
We've realized now that there are your 9-to-5ers, of course, and the people come in and you can test the water with those guys like we do, who you know. Do you want to do a little bit more? Can you do a little bit more? But you need people that believe in it and that want more from it. And you're always going to have that in salons where, you know, to keep the business alive, you've got your guys that are your bread and butter. They're coming in, they're doing it. I'm so lucky to have Finn by my side where he cares. He wants to push the brand forward. And I took Finn for a meeting not a very short time ago where I sat down with him. I said, you're at a point now, Finn, where you've listened a lot. You know the brand. So whereas I was going, Finn, I need you to do that, or Finn, can you do that? And he's learned the style, so he was doing it very well. I want Finn now to just be like, Tom, I've done this, or I've done. So I'm not thinking it. So he's been, you know, for the last 3-4 months, he's coming up to me and he's already taken the thought from my head because he knows what to do. And now he's at a point now where he is pushing it.
Sure.
Further than I could ever do on my own. Do you see what I'm saying? But that comes up also as well. You know, Finn's looking at stores, we're looking, and I feel like he's ready to go there. And
well, I guess that is a big bit that, we speak a lot about how do you get barbers, how do you recruit, and so on.
It's very
and we've
difficult.
Touched on it recently about retaining your barbers.
Exactly.
That, you know, there have been some big brands that have shut down or cut back or
this
or
is something we care about a lot.
Because they're not caring about their staff. Like you say, you look around, you're like, look, we're going. At that point, there was suddenly money in the bank to sweeten you, but it was too late. Emotionally, mentally, you moved on.
We were done. And that was too late for them. But this is really important. To be able to have a team. So how many barbers have you been to? And you know, you see the guys, you don't see them again. And it's like a conveyor belt of barbers. But we have said to each other, and we said it is very important to us to make sure I want the same team in 5 years' time. Someone might leave, but we've still kept, no one's left. Nobody in that whole time. And we've got the same team. And that is really important because I want the clients to feel that. You know, when you've got...
Have you got a bit of a hybrid? Some are employed, some are self-employed,
so
some are...
Everyone's self-employed, but we do it as a consultancy. So like they're consulting for the company. So it's done that way. But they are self-employed, They are self-employed. So there is contracts that we give out, but it's, you know, very clear on what needs to be done, but they are they're everybody is self-employed.
Everyone is a consultant
working full time. So we, yeah, everybody is full time here. We have no part time.
So that does give you a little bit more control over what the kind of commitment to the company
exactly
is.
Exactly that. I mean, if you've got having a salon full of chair rent people, you're never going to get where you want to get in an aspect of building a brand. You know, you have to have people that can maybe take, you know, you have to say, this is how what things done. And that's what they have to abide by as such. But it also gives them freedom as well with holiday and things like that, where they feel comfortable. So you're not slaving out. If the guys want to take 3 weeks off, I'd like to say no, but they could do it.
Yeah.
You know, because they're self-employed and they're consulting in a way like that. But we have general rules, but everyone respects it in a way, don't they?
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, especially.
I mean, does that fall more to you? I hear you doing the roads and stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Is that a sharper end for you to deal with?
I mean, that side of things hard in terms of sort of, you know, trying to get people. We were obviously in the beginning when we had less people, trying to get people to do extra days and sort of, you know, push for the, you know, the targets and things like that.
Which people did do, to
which
be fair.
Everyone has paid their part in that, and everyone has put in extra time. And now the team's a bit bigger, we can sort of relax a little bit on that because we have the space more full now. But yeah, when it comes down to having six people in every day and then working the days off and being open 7 days a week, no one's really got set days off. But I think we like that, to be honest.
Yeah,
having
that
sort
of
fluidity in what days you can have off. So if you've got something going on the weekend, you can have the weekend off.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I like having a Sunday and a Monday off. So if I can have a Sunday and Monday off, I'm buzzing about that.
Because I
don't mind working
very flexible.
A Saturday. I like it.
But I think that's presumably a big part of how you choose your people that come and work for you. I think if you're just like, guy wanders in, I want to rent a chair, there you go.
You're always at odds, aren't you? I mean, the thing is, and you never know what character that, you know, and you want people to be talking about your brand in the chair, not what they do and what this is, and become a team, you know, just to become that team is
and
very
the recruitment that we do is, you know, step by step.
Yeah, step
like,
by step.
Invite
so when
people
we look,
in
yeah, when
for
we,
a chat,
yeah.
see what their character's like. They spend about an hour or so in the shop, just walking around, having a chat with everyone.
That's what we like to do. We like to say, look, you'd like to come work for us. Exactly like you said, we just say, look, come and spend a day with us or half a day. Like you say, that's how we do it. And then because they might come in and say, oh, it's not for me. And then they go away. And then me, either Finn, Martin, or we call them and we say, you know, we'd like you to come in, do three of your friends, come relax in the shop. Let's see how you get on. Just that's like a trades test. And then after that, when they relax, when they've done that, we say, okay, can we book you in three clients? And they might do that the same day or they might come back another day. Because, you know, we've had so many time wasters, haven't we?
Yeah.
So many time wasters over time, say this, and this. And I think one thing is because they see the shop and they see the work going on and they're not quite up to standard, or they're just time wasters. And we want to make sure that people want to work here.
Sure.
So it's a process of like three visits to the shop. Mm. And then if they're ringing me saying, how did I get on or how I'm doing? You know, they're in, you know, they're good for it. And that is our process. That's what we do. I don't know what other people do.
But you've also got an apprentice in here. So how do you manage to, which he's presumably employed or is he?
Reese has gone through, you know, MVQ and things like that. He's done certain things already. But when we took him on, he's a bit older. So we was always talking about when we were, you know, when we wanted to take someone on that was going to learn through us. We wanted to make sure that it was someone slightly older because of the maturity and to get him through quickly. So, you know, when Reese has come in now, he's doing amazing. Like he's amazing. He holds himself well. There was a little bit of, I'd say, media training because he comes from, you know, certain areas where they talk a little bit slang or talk a bit this and talk a bit that. So we were talking.
A bit sharpening up
with how, because he's front of house, right? Mm. So when we can't always get there, front of house is very important. So we talked to him, you know, open your mouth a little bit more, make sure you're speaking right. But that was one side of it. But what we did was we didn't actually let Reese cut any hair for about 2 months, was it? Two or three months.
Yeah. Because again, you were testing him.
Yeah, because I was testing him because I wanted to see that he cared, one, and that he wanted to be in the shop. So I know some people think that was crazy, but it worked because he started working with the clients. He started, you know, washing hair properly. He was focused on how I'm talking to people. I said, watch everybody in the salon. I want you to watch what I'm using, watch products I'm using, watch brushes I'm using. When I was a junior at the time with Tony and Guy, Finn was very good at this when he first started coming. When you learn those types of things, salon life, and then you start cutting, you've got a deeper understanding of how you're saying goodbye to somebody, how you're saying hello to somebody. Why have I used that brush when he's there with a mirror?
Yeah, no, I think we come back to soft skills a lot.
I've forgotten.
It's easy lost.
Yeah, it's easy lost.
And the focus is too much on the haircut.
That's it. I think that matters so much.
I think we've kind of wrapped up part one, I think.
Nice. Yeah,
I think that was really good. Thanks for that. I hope that's helped. The idea, I guess, if you're thinking about opening up your own store, get someone brighter than you involved and use their money. Thank you very much. Really appreciated that.
Thank you.
Come back for part two.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.